Sports USA presents Conversations with Joe Morgan,
the podcast,
where sports and entertainment icons, Hall of Famers, and champions come to talk. And now, from the Sports USA studios in Los Angeles, here's Joe Morgan.
Welcome to Conversations with Joe Morgan podcast. I'm Joe Morgan, along with my partner, Larry Kahn. A lot of things going on in baseball and football right now. Larry, more controversial stuff than anything else. You start with the Dodgers and the Padres. They made that big, big trade, you know, for Matt Kemp, and he hasn't been able to pass the physical so far.
Apparently, the latest word is that Matt Kemp, the reason he hasn't passed the physical is he has not one but two arthritic hips. Now, here's a guy who's 30 years old, came off a great second half of the season. And what do you do, Joe, if you're the San Diego Padres?
Well, it's a tough deal because the Dodgers had to know something about this, you would think, because at the end of the year, everyone gets a physical. At least that's the way it was when I played. At the end of the year, they give everyone a physical just to see how they are, before, the winter going home. I would say the Dodgers had to know something about this and probably reported partially, at least, to the San Diego Padres. And the Padres probably thought that they could pass him, and now they're going to have to find out whether he can play or not. I think it's a very difficult position for the Padres because there's been a lot of, talk in San Diego about Matt Kemp coming down, adding new players, making this a fun team to watch. And I think Matt Kemp would do that if he's able to play. But I don't know how you pass a guy with the physical, especially when, there's like $107 million or something still left on the contract. I know the Dodgers are going to pay some of that, but you're still responsible for the rest of it. So if he's not able to play, I don't know. He'll have to go back to the Dodgers.
What's interesting, though, is the decision that – well, let me ask you. Maybe you know, as being associated with the front office of the Reds, is it up to the Padres? In other words, if he doesn't pass the physical, whoever is giving him that physical, do they still have the option of taking the player, or is it automatic that they cannot take the player because he did not pass a physical exam?
No, he can take they can take him. It's not mandatory for them to give him a physical. It's not, in the trade guidelines. It would be at the end of the year for them to give him a physical, I guess, for themselves. But no, the Padres can still take him as damaged goods, I guess, if we want to use that term. But it's up to the Padres to decide what they're going to do, not the Dodgers. And it's happened before where they have sent players back, in a trade because they were not willing to take that risk that something goes wrong with him, and all they get is the insurance money.
Well, now, does this put the Padres in a stronger position in that the Dodgers clearly want to get rid of Matt Kemp? So can the Padres come back and say, hey, we know we agreed to this, but we didn't know we were getting damaged goods. We are still willing to take him off your hands, but now the price got a little bit higher.
Yes, I'm sure that the Padres are trying to figure a way out of this because I'm sure they want to keep Matt Kemp. But you're right. The Dodgers, what I read was they're going to throw $30 million into the deal. Maybe they'll get him to throw $40 or $50 million in. Hey, because the Dodgers are just throwing away money. I mean, they released Brian Wilson without even taking him to spring training and going to have to give him $9.5 million. Yeah. So what's another $10 million if they give it to the Padres?
Yeah, exactly. It is amazing when you read all this. Yeah. And we've discussed this before. The most amazing thing to me is that now teams are giving contracts out where it's no longer just a team option as to whether or not they're going to bring him back for another year.
Right.
It's the player option. Dan Heron had that option with the Dodgers. And he said, I'll take the $10 million. Then he wound up getting traded to Miami. You have the same situation with Brian Wilson. What player would not take the $10 million guarantee, unless, of course, they're a free agent and they can get more elsewhere? But nobody's going to say, I don't want your $10 million. I'm going to step down.
Well, it's interesting that they're giving the players the options now. Look, here's the deal. When I played, the owners had too much power. Now the players have too much power. There's a happy medium in there someplace, but I don't know if we're ever going to reach it. We've gone from the owners, telling you this is what you're going to get and no more, and we've gone to the fact now that the players can say, well, if you won't give it to me, somebody else will. So the power has shifted from the owners to the players now, and again, I think there is a happy medium in there someplace.
Well, but when the owners decide we're not going to give you more than X, it's now collusion. So how do you avoid that?
That's what I'm saying. It's the players have gotten too much power from that collusion situation. That's where they gain most of the power. But I do know that the collective bargain agreement will be up next year, 2016, I guess. And they're starting to work on it now. And there will be some changes. I think there will be some changes to the way this system is run. Maybe that'd be one of the things that will not happen. Players will not have the option. But I do believe that there will be some changes made to the system, in this next collective bargaining agreement.
There have been rumblings, speaking of that collective bargaining agreement, that the next one may not be so smooth, and there could conceivably, and there's always a possibility, but there seems to be more and more steam towards possibly a work stoppage. Do you think that could happen again?
I just cannot see a work stoppage happening again. The fans put up with it last time, and we had, the great home run races and all that to bring us back. I don't think the fans would come back this time. When you're looking at guys getting $325 million 13-year deals, and you're looking at owners who have, when Bud took over, I guess it was $1 billion in revenues. Now they're up to close to $9 billion. I don't see how the fans would put up with this when both sides have gotten richer and richer and richer, and then you're going to have a work stoppage. So I think it would be devastating to the game because I know the fans have had enough of this.
Let's talk a little bit about the Cincinnati Reds. Some interesting transactions going on at the end of the winter meetings. They traded Matt Latos, who had been their ace a year and a half ago. Talk a little bit about what's going on with the Cincinnati situation.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting there. I was a little surprised that the Marlins or someone was willing to take Matt Latos because, remember, he was on the disabled list, down the stretch he couldn't pitch. He's had some, injuries the last couple of years. And I was thinking that, if they were going to trade him, they'd have to trade him at the deadline after he proved that he was healthy. But the Marlins were willing to take a chance. And it's not that big a chance because Matt Latos, when he's on top of his game, he is one of the top pitchers in all of baseball. As you said, he was the ace 2 years ago before Johnny Cueto took that spot last year. They got, they feel like they brought some players in that can help them. As far as even being the fifth starter this year, Anthony DeScalafani is a guy that's going to get a chance to, be on the roster to be one of the fifth starter. So we'll see how that goes. But I hate to lose Matt Latos personally, but I do understand. And, there was a lot of money, that the Reds saved, in making a deal for Matt Latos and Alfredo Simon. They saved about, $15 million that they can put somewhere else. And they also, traded Heisey to the Dodgers, which, took a load off the payroll. They are non-tendering Andrusek, which means that they saved about $18 million in payroll so far. So now they still have to find a left fielder. And all the left fielders that were free agents that they were coveting, just about are gone. I guess Aoki's still out there, and we'll see what happens with that. But they've also got to find two new starters now because Alfredo Simon was an excellent starter last year, and Latos was as well when he was healthy. They have Tony Cingrani, who I have a lot of faith in, but they want him to develop an off-speed pitch. He has pitched well in his starts in the major leagues. And again, they've got the Cuban player that they signed over the winter for $27 million, Raisel Iglesias, and they're not sure whether he's going to be a bullpen guy or a starter. He had been a bullpen guy in Cuba, but they're thinking about making him a starter. I tell you what, when I saw him, if he's going to start, he better eat a whole bunch of hamburgers and stuff because, man, he was thin. He was a thin guy, but he did great. He pitched very well in the Arizona Instructional League, and, he didn't even give up a hit or anything in the three appearances that he made. So they're confident that he can pitch. It's just a matter of where, they're going to put him. So, and of course, we still have Sean Marshall, who's coming off an injury. So there are a lot of possibilities, but it's back to that same old thing. If this comes through, if that comes through, then when we're good. So we'll have to wait and see. But we still need a left fielder that can drive in some runs or produce some runs, let's say.
And there was talk a couple of years ago about Chapman being moved from the closer's position to being a starting pitcher. Is that still a possibility, or is he just set as a closer now?
I think he's set as a closer. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that time has passed. It's not to say that he couldn't do it, but it just seems to me that that time may have passed as far as him going to be an everyday a starter. And I'm not sure he wants to be a starter. He loves coming out of the bullpen. He loves doing what he does. You know, last year, you know, you could say arguably he had the best season of any reliever in baseball. I mean, he was unbelievable last year.
And it becomes a mindset with some guys. Some guys don't like the idea of sitting around for 4 days between appearances. And when you're a closer, there's a chance you're in there every game. You've got to be ready mentally at the start of every game, thinking, today I'm going to pitch. And I think that appeals to a lot of guys, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. I mean, there's no doubt. But, you know, you get a big adrenaline rush when you come out of that bullpen in the ninth inning.
Right.
They're playing your song, and everybody's excited. So, you know, I can understand his point. But at one time, I think he did want to be a starter, but that didn't work out.
Joe, we covered a little bit of baseball. It's certainly time to talk football. We are at the tail end of the NFL season when things really get heated up as far as the playoffs are concerned. The college football playoff coming up, the first ever four-team college football playoff. But certainly near and dear to your heart in your Northern California home, there is a lot of talk about Jim Harbaugh, who it does not appear will be back as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. There are rumors that he would like to be to stay in Northern California. Would the Raiders be interested? And, of course, there is now confirmed an offer on the table from the University of Michigan where he played his college ball.
You know, the question, Larry, is how did this go so wrong so quickly? You know, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, Jim Harbaugh was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yep.
He had come in. The 49ers had been down for a lot of years. He came in, took them to three NFL championship games, got to the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, he's a bad guy now. And I just don't know exactly what happened and how it – but it was there were rumors about this at the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Even if he'd have won the Super Bowl or even if he would have gotten to the NFC the championship game. So I don't know exactly what's going on over there. You hear a lot of different reports. I mean, it started with rumors that the players didn't want to play for him. I don't see that as the big problem because the players played hard. If you saw the game against Seattle – their last game against Seattle, that was a hard-fought game. They played hard and so forth. Now, there are some things that I think should be corrected, but that's just from my football knowledge of, you know, being around the great Al Davis and Bill Walsh. But, you know, the offense just doesn't click. And Jerry Rice has said it. Some of the, you know, players who played for Bill Walsh and whatever said the offense is the real problem and needs to be fixed. But as far as Harbaugh is concerned, I personally just do not understand it. I mean, you're not going to find a better coach. I mean, you look around the league, and a lot of guys have struggled. I mean, even, you know, the Saints have been always one of the greatest teams, always there. All of a sudden, I mean, they're struggling. They're 6-8, I guess, and trying to make win the division. They can still win it. But I don't know if a coach – I once heard a guy say, after a while, they stop listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what that time frame is. But maybe that's what has happened in as far as the 49ers are concerned. I have not seen a lot of players complain. It's been coming out of the newspaper, and maybe I guess the general manager, Balky, and Harbaugh doesn't get along. But they didn't get along, you know, a couple of years ago, and they still played well. So I don't know exactly what happened over there this year. A lot of the guys, you know, I mean, you take Vernon Davis, one of the great tight ends in the game. He has not had a good year. Crabtree. I mean, Bolden is basically the only receiver they had that has had a great year, and they just can't stretch the field. And I just, there are a lot of different things wrong with the offense. That's what I see, and that's what I hear, and that's what I read from players who have played there.
I think to a degree it also becomes a battle of egos because in the beginning everything's great and we're best friends. And then when you have success, the general manager wants credit for the success. Obviously the coach feels like he should get credit for the success. And from what I have read about the relationship between the GM and the coach with the 49ers, it is not a very healthy relationship.
No. I'm not, you know, it just seems like it's a cut and dried thing here that he's going to leave. He's going someplace. He will not be the 49er coach next year, even though he has a year left on his contract.
Yeah.
And the 49ers are saying they will trade him, I guess, you know, because they have him for another year. If he wants to go to another NFL team, maybe they'll get a draft choice or something like that. And then, obviously, there's Michigan. But I have a problem when a guy like Jim Harbaugh got close to winning the Super Bowl, which is the biggest prize in football. I just can't see him going back to college, because winning, even if you were to go back and win, you know, in the college system, it's not the NFL, because usually the coaches in the college are trying to get to the NFL. So I can't see him going backwards personally, but hey, I don't know all the ins and outs of what's going on. And maybe that'll settle him down into one area. But I'm a Jim Harbaugh fan, I guess I might say, because he was at Stanford. I watched him win at Stanford. I watched him win at San Diego. I mean, I've watched him win every place. So yes. I just don't understand how he's not a winner all of a sudden at this year. So we'll see what happens.
You mentioned you're close to the Raider organization, and there has been talk that Harbaugh would like to be, if he stays in California, obviously the Raiders would be the opportunity. Is there a chance in your mind that he would become the next coach of the Raiders?
I'm not sure. I thought the Raiders were pursuing John Gruden, but Gruden just signed a long-term deal within ESPN to remain, I guess, on Monday Night Football, so I'm not sure that he's going to be in the mix. There are a lot of good coaches out there, I think. You know, there are a lot of people out there. I'm not sure what's going to happen to Tony Sperano, so I shouldn't be firing him before this is all over. You know, they have played a couple of good games under him. They've had a couple of stinkers as well, so you never know how they're thinking there. The front office is thinking. A lot going on here. I'm just not sure which direction they're going to go in. I think they're trying to find a direction that takes them, you know, back to where they were before. But again, as I said, John Gruden, I think, was their number one choice, but I don't see that happening now.
You mentioned earlier the San Francisco 49ers, and I want to bring something up that has just taken place over the last few days. And it's not unique just to the 49ers. Certainly it is coming into focus because of what just happened. But it seems to happen not just in football, but in every sport. You have a situation with a player, McDonald, who was questioned about domestic violence early in the year, and no charges were brought. The 49ers made the conscious decision to continue to play him during the time that it was being decided whether or not those charges would be brought. They were not. Now he gets in trouble the other day. There's an assault charge, a sexual assault charge, and now they just say, that's it. Ray McDonald, you're no longer a part of this team. How much of that is taking the high road and saying, this guy is not the right guy for our team, which is, of course, what any team wants its fans to believe? And how much of the difference is that when the first charges came up, this guy was a big part of a defense that was expected to carry them possibly to a Super Bowl, and now they make the decision the week after they've been eliminated from the playoffs?
Well, I don't think it's so much of them saying that this is just not right. I think they finally got enough. But by the same token, if they were playing for the Super Bowl, still had a Super Bowl chance, I'm not sure that they would have done it at this time. Let's face it, Alden Smith, who is one of their great players, I mean, he's been in trouble a couple of times, and they didn't release him. I really believe that these guys are going to have to be taught a lesson. I guess the only way you're going to do it is to take them off the field. At least that's what I hear from some of the analysts that I really have faith in. Taking people off the field hurts them, sometimes maybe even more than the money, because they haven't really seen the money. You know, the money goes into a bank or whatever. But not being able to play, having to stand on the sidelines or not being in the game does hurt you a lot. And maybe this will help, you know, Ray McDonald come to his senses if he's guilty of some of these things. I think therein still lies the problem with the 49ers and other people. He wasn't indicted on the first one. This one they're investigating. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But it seems like the guys that get in trouble once get in trouble more. You know, it happens again. I mean, things seem to happen. And, again, when you take them off the field, that may be the only way to save them, because the money doesn't seem to matter anymore because they make so much money.
Yeah. Well, and that leads to the question that you and I were discussing before we started the show. These guys that get away with it once, I guess they must feel as though they're untouchable, because it seems like on many occasions it's the same guy that has a second problem, as opposed to learning from the lesson and saying, boy, I dodged the proverbial bullet. I've got to be good now. Right. It seems like there's maybe some of that, but there's a whole lot more where guys say, hey, you know what? This just proves I can get away with anything I want.
Yeah, well, it seems like they don't learn from the first, you know, experience. So I don't know. I just feel bad because, as I've said before, look, it takes a special type of personality to be a pro football player. I mean, and it's a tough business. You have to be tough. And you don't back down. I mean, you can't back down on the field. And it just seems that they realize that carries over off the field where they can't back down, whether it's from a woman or another man. You know, they end up having, you know, confrontations in bars or clubs or whatever. That's part of your makeup. To be a professional athlete, you got to be tough. And the great ones obviously can turn it off once they leave the stadium. But some of the guys can't, haven't been able to turn it off. And violence seems to be, you know, because the NFL football is a violent game.
Yes.
Anybody that thinks it's not has not stood on the sidelines or haven't been that close to it. You have to be violent to play that game, play it properly.
And you mentioned being able to shut it off. I'm not sure that that's as easy as it sounds. It really isn't, because you have to work yourself into the proverbial frenzy in order to play for 3 hours like that. And when it's over, it's not, you can't just say, okay, game's over, I'm just going to go back to being the normal guy and I'm going to go mow my grass.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, as a former player, you know, my adrenaline was high playing the game, playing the bank. I couldn't just, as soon as the game's over, walk away. I used to sit in the locker room and write in a book, you know, just so I could calm down. It's just not that easy. And I wasn't hitting people. I wasn't in a violent game. You know, we were just playing, you know, a sport that's, you know, more cerebral than maybe just running into people. But it does take a while for you to calm down, especially in football, because they only play once a week. Baseball, you do it every day. You get try to get a system of how you can handle it. But it's very difficult when you look at it from a football standpoint, where you're out there bashing and running into somebody, hitting somebody for 48 minutes. Now all of a sudden you got to say, oh, I'm a father again, you know, go out and see your little kid and whatever. So you have to take some time to gather yourself. You know, and speaking of that, it brings me to something else I want to talk about, and that's Jay Cutler, you know, the situation in Chicago. It's interesting because, you know, from the beginning of the season, a lot of guys have been saying, you know, he's been paid like an elite quarterback, but he is not an elite quarterback. And he leads the league in turnovers, and he does it all the time, you know, year in, year out. It's kind of interesting because, you know, they gave him a biggest contract. He's making more money than any other player in the NFL this year. And, I mean, they gave him a big contract. What do you do there? I think, personally, I mean, I think they're going to have to get a new coach and everything else. And then I guess the offensive coordinator, you know, criticized him publicly the other day, as did Jay Gruden, you know, with RG3. I find that appalling that, you know, things that come out of the clubhouse and you're a coach and you go, you know, criticize your players in public. Just like I didn't like what, you know, Jay Gruden did, you know, with RG3. I mean, it's okay to say that he didn't play well, but to go into everything he did wrong, I just don't like that. And, look, I think you're going to have a lot of rebellion coming from a lot of these players, you know, when they say if he'll do it to him, he'll do it to me too, you know.
Well, there were a couple of differences. Certainly in the Chicago situation, it was the offensive coordinator, Aaron Cromer, who was apparently like the source. Unnamed sources say that Jay Cutler this, Jay Cutler that. And then Cromer finally came out and said, yeah, I was the guy, which to me is really appalling, because here's a guy who's on the coaching staff and won't be quoted. I think in the case of Jay Gruden, and I'm not taking his side, I think he tried so many things that he said, you know what, I'm going to say what I need to say. And having said that, it's now coming out that no matter what Gruden says, it gets twisted. If he says, look, this guy's got all the potential in the world, the media turns it around and says, well, now he says he's got all the potential in the world. A week ago, he said he's got all these problems. Well, the reality is he does have potential, and the reality is he does have problems. And no matter how a person phrases it, it's like statistics, Joe. You've been around stats long enough. You and I can take the same set of statistics on the same player, and I can say, okay, I'll turn this into a negative, and you could say you'll turn it into a positive, and we'll both be able to do it. So it's all perception becomes reality. And in this day and age, with instant access to news and blogs and everything and podcasts like we're doing right now and opinions, it's amazing how quickly it can spread like wildfire, and one thing can get blown out of proportion. And I think there's an awful lot of that, especially with the NFL, because it's really become a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 52-week-a-year source of news/entertainment.
But I have to go back to something you said that you're 100% correct. Sparky Anderson used to say, I don't care what you say, just put your name on it.
Right.
And like you're saying, Jay Gruden did put his name on it.
Yes.
So that does make a big difference. The other thing I like that may have forced RG3 into stop Twittering so much,
yes.
You know? I mean, he's always out there. Now he says he's not going to be on the social media nearly as much, and I agree with that. I mean, I look Tom Brady. You don't read something from him every week, or Aaron Rodgers, or Manning, all the great quarterbacks. They don't do that. And I think that's even LeBron James and those guys, he cuts his stuff off, you know. So I'm glad to see that RG3 is going to do that, because I think that was a big source of a lot of his problems, you know, especially if they're in the clubhouse, that the players have to read something every day that was said about him or that he said about, you know, the team or something like that. So, like you said, it's look, the football is, you know, the 500-pound gorilla. Every day, if you say something, it's going to get out there one way or the other.
Yep.
Whether they, you know, slant it their way or try to realize what you're saying, they continue to put it out there. I read a story the other day about something that happened in a game, and one guy said it this way and another guy said it that way. From a positive, the other was negative.
There it is. Yep.
There it is. We see things differently. So that's the way that's why social media is what it is, though.
And the other thing with social media, I think if you're as a quarterback, you have to be a leader. And as a leader, if things are going well, nobody's going to question you doing something on social media. When things are going poorly, and they have certainly gone poorly for RG3 since his rookie season, then there are those who are going to say, why is he spending time on social media instead of spending more time in the film room, more time in the weight room, more time worrying about his team getting better? And again, it's a perception. And that's something that more athletes have to be cognizant of.
Well, I saw the other day, and whether it's a positive or a negative, I think it can be a negative sometimes. It said that Johnny Manziel, after his poor showing, he was there 5 hours early in the film room. I think you can overdo it, too, you know what I mean. But at least he is making an effort to show people, hey, this is all I care about right now.
He made the effort, but that leads to the question, was he there 5 hours early before he had a bad game? And if he would have been there five hours early, would he have had that bad a game? There was an interesting story just written about Tom Brady in Sports Illustrated in the year-end issue. And Rodney Harrison, who, of course, played with Tom Brady in a couple of Super Bowl years and is now an announcer on NBC's Football Night in America, talked about coming in one day. He walked in, I guess, to the weight room at 6:30 in the morning, and Brady was already in there, and he looked at him and said, good evening. And Rodney Harrison was like, "What? Okay, that's it." So the next day, Rodney Harrison came in at 6:15, and Brady was there, and he said, good evening. And the next day, he came in at 6 in the morning, and Brady was there, and he said, good evening. And Rodney Harrison said, the heck with it. There's no way in the world I'm coming in before 6 o'clock in the morning. But that's a great story about Tom Brady. He wasn't doing that just to get under somebody's skin. It's his work habit and work ethic, and I think that has to have certainly something to do with the amount of success that he's had.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. It has a lot to do with his success, you know. But that brings us to another point. I was watching, and they're criticizing him, I guess, for walking up and down the bench the other day using the F word.
Right.
But guess what? He made a great point. He said, I didn't ask NBC to put that on TV. You know what I mean? He says, I'm talking to my teammates on the sideline. Why are they following me?
Right, right.
Why are they doing that? You know, they were, you know, criticizing him, saying kids were watching at home and so forth. And I agree with him. I've always felt that sometimes television is a little too intrusive into those moments on the sideline when in the heat of the moment and stuff, you know, you might say something to a teammate or you say things, but they're right there and what you say is, you know, gets on the air, whether it's audible or just you have to read their lips. And that's what we were doing with Tom Brady last week, reading his lips. But he was just trying to fire his teammates up. So I guess he's not supposed to do that.
Yeah, it is amazing to me that people, it goes back to what you were saying earlier, Joe. Everybody expects these guys to be perfect gentlemen all the time and never raise their voice or never get angry or throw out a cuss word or something like that. That's not the nature of being a competitor. As a competitor, you say and do certain things. And if he says something, I don't think he should be vilified for using language. He didn't go up to a kid and say, hey, kid, F you. Okay, he certainly didn't do anything like that. He's doing what he does, and the camera was being intrusive. And that certainly has led to it. When you watch baseball, you never can read anybody's lips in baseball anymore because everybody talks into their glove.
Yeah, you know? Right. Good point.
Yeah.
He maybe needs to have a glove.
Yeah.
Or yelling at his helmet or whatever.
And every head coach.
But everybody should look at Tom Brady and say, this is what it's about.
Yes.
I mean, he's in the trenches with his teammates. He yells at them. They yell at him. I mean, it's back and forth. This is what it's all about, you know, because he had that great clash on the sidelines with his offensive coordinator.
Yes.
You know, those things happen in the heat of the moment. But, you know, unfortunately, like I said, if anything happens on the football field now, it gets shown on television. And I just don't always agree with that. So, and it's very rarely are we showing the positive. It's,
right.
It's usually the negative.
Well, again, it's turned into a negative. No matter. You as a former athlete, you're seeing Tom Brady and you're taking it as a positive. But the majority of people are not, they're not saying, boy, isn't that great the way he gets fired up and gets into the game? Yeah. What they're saying is, well, look at him. He's got a potty mouth. How many times did you play? And seriously, you were with very successful teams. And did you get into it with a Pete
of
Rose?
Course.
Or just, my point exactly.
Yeah, I've heard every one of those guys, and I love them as teammates. I mean, we've all yelled at each other. I mean, that's the way it goes. I mean, that's the name of the game. You know, firing each other up and making sure that we're on our P's and Q's and not relaxing. So. And as Tom said, I like the way he said it. He said, that word gets their attention.
Yeah, that's right.
I like that. You know what I mean? If he came over and say, how you doing, son?
Yeah,
you know,
that wouldn't get their attention.
He wouldn't have got their attention.
Right.
But that word gets their attention, he said. So I'm with you, Tom.
Joe, time goes by quickly. We have run out of time, unfortunately.
Well, Larry, I want to wish you and your family a happy holidays and all of our listeners out there and a healthy new year, because it comes up very quickly. This year has flown by for me. I don't know about the rest of you, but it has flown by, and I look forward to 2015.
Joe, the older we get, the faster the years go by, and that's,
that's
there's
true.
No joke there. And you know what? I'd like to say something about it, but somebody might read my lips. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, same to you.
Thanks for listening to Conversations with Joe Morgan,
the podcast.
Don't forget to check out Sports USA's other great podcasts, including Snakes Takes with Jake Plummer, The Rich Report with Tom and Sam Rich, Ted Sobel's Excellent Sports Adventure, and The Fred Dreyer Show. All available anytime at sportsusamedia.com.